There are two utility libraries implementing parts of certain standards. I'm not going to go into detail with this, but that's what we use. Especially the last two are only used for very specific small things because they're not complete enough for what we need them. But, okay, move on to the project side of things. We have an introduction to what FireWire is, basic concepts, and the history of FreeBob means. First, actually, Paul already mentioned all of this a little bit, but this is the detail. First prototype demo 2 years ago. The release history of FreeBob 1. Actually, we started alpha testing and beta testing cycle around February 2006. First release candidate around May. The first release took quite some time because there were not really enough testers. The confidence was not high. People have needs a device to test it with, and it's a little bit difficult if you're not going to buy one if it's not really supported, and it's a little bit of a deadlock situation, which makes it go a little bit slow. And then recently we released a 1.0.3 release, which fixes some rather major but undetected bugs. What does it support? Only Bebop platform devices. Bebop is a platform designed by Bridgeco. It was actually presented at the same time as the demo 2 years ago. It's just a platform by a company, and they sell the platform and the basic usage. They sell it to the end equipment vendors. And those end equipment vendors build a nice box around it, build some analog I/O interfaces, and then sell it on, package it, do distribution, and make most of the money, probably. So, platform support is nice, but it doesn't, I'm going to talk about it later. It supports audio and MIDI streaming. What is unsupported? First of all, mixer control, synchronization. Is supported, but synchronization selection source selection isn't. So you are a little bit dependent on what the device defaults to. I should have said at all sample rates here, because we do support setting sample rates and things like that. ALSA is not supported, Jack is. And then there's a constant round trip latency issue, which basically means that if you start Jack with the FreeBob backend, or if you start any FreeBob thing, that you're not really sure of what the round trip latency is going to be, due to the fact that you have several systems that you're going over. You need several layers of buffering, and these buffer depths are not really well defined. They can have some variation, meaning that the round trip latency is going to be different every time you start your backend, and that can be a serious problem when overdubbing or when going from actual normal mode to freewheeling and back. Excuse me. In which backend is restarted. This wasn't really considered as a big problem at first because it's very difficult to solve. But we did get user complaints about it, which is actually rather normal if you think about it. And of course, it's supported in the new version. Good. What will be the next slide? Okay. Meanwhile, what was happening? Things don't stop at a 1.0. Usually, they even go on beyond what you want for 1.0 before it even gets released. Some skip to 2.0 immediately. We first released 1.0. So what was happening actually meanwhile? Somewhere down under, there was a reverse engineering effort for the Motu 828 MK2 and the Motu Traveler. So they're basically reverse engineering the complete protocol by getting a PCI Linux card and doing what the Nouveau people are also doing for NVIDIA. And then Jonathan contacted us, like, we want to implement this and that and that. And this actually was a trigger to start rewriting the complete code base in such a way that we could support any device. Because I wanted to avoid that he went off and did his own driver, because it's completely stupid. It would have taken him 2 years to get somewhere and do the same mistakes as I. And we had some kind of abstraction, and I was working on more abstraction, so I really wanted him to go on board, and the more the merrier in this case. And also, at last year's conference, there was a meeting with the TC Applied people regarding their DICE 2 platform. They wanted it supported too. Probably they saw that people were using it in their press releases or whatever, and they said, we want that too. And there are customers that might be interested, and we have people working in our company that use Linux and want to try this and blah blah blah. Anyway, they wanted this support, which is the second platform, and which would be very nice if we could actually do that, because then we evolve to one driver, fits all FireWire devices. Simplicity for users, and for us it's a little bit more work, but one driver fits all is perfect for users, I think, personally. So, somewhere before 1.0, the FreeBOP2 branch forked. It was a rewrite of the code base to get to a device agnostic framework. Especially the streaming part had to be rewritten, but the design of that is going to be clear in a minute. Okay. What are the goals? Let's summarize them first. The goals for the future are to provide a driver framework for all FireWire audio devices, no matter who makes them and what standard or protocol or whatever they follow. If they follow the FireWire standards, then we will support them. Currently, we have Bebop, DICE, and Motu support in our framework. Metric Hollow contacted us around the same time as the around last year's conference, but things are not really moving along there. They explicitly asked, will you support our device? Nice. Others are not present there because they either refuse to cooperate or just are not interested. Mainly, RME is the biggest example. They just don't care, apparently, or they have licensing issues because they didn't develop their stack themselves. I don't know what exact reason is, but there is a reason why they don't want to cooperate. And that's pretty clear that they don't want to. And Echo Audio doesn't really seem to care. They don't mind that they are not going to help. They say, well, our system is class compliant, and therefore you should be able to write a driver for it. But class compliance in FireWire is not really an issue. It's not really something that is well defined. We want to support all features, because that means complete device control and audio MIDI streaming. While audio MIDI streaming is the most difficult part to implement because it introduces time and synchronization and all these weird things, what users actually seem to notice is if they can switch their phantom power on or off, or if they can use their mixer, because apparently recording is not the only thing that they do with it, which is normal, of course. But these things are getting used as mixers and as with some cheap Behringer thingy to replace an analog mixer and route and things like that. And the experience, the device, so let's say the end user experience is at least half determined by what this control stuff does, I think, personally. And so we really, really need to pay attention to that, and it's a really difficult problem. Because we don't want to provide a too complex system. For example, mixers are really difficult to abstract in such a way that they are usable for every device. In the Windows world, every device has its own control panel, and it's totally customized. In our world, we have one generic mixer that tries to provide this generic view of the cards, but we all know that there are some problems with that, trying to do that. And we will have to find a way. I think it will be a general API, a well-defined API that is rather broad, and then a specific control panel for every device. I think that is the best way to do so. Comments are welcome later. But it's really an unanswered question, and I can use some feedback on that, or we can use some feedback. We want to keep it a user space library, because user space is very nice to work in, very different from kernel space. And current kernels can do it, so why not? And multiple audio APIs instead of only check now would be nice. And that is going to happen. But there's more than code only. Different sources give different numbers, but you could say that 80% of the interfaces will be or are based on a Bebop or a DICE platform, which is very good for us because we support both. We have both platform vendors on board. But platform support only takes you halfway. The backend, being the actual streaming and data conversion, is something that is difficult and is done by the platform vendors and is actually their unique selling argument. So like, you don't have to do the difficult stuff. And then the front-end, or the difficult digital stuff. Let's say the front-end contains the difficult analog stuff, but usually end-to-end vendors know what they're doing on that part. The front-end is customized by equipment vendors, so you need them too. And the first end-user experience is the other half. It's not the streaming half, it's the control half. It's, can I do mixing? Do I have some sound routing here? And that's where the equipment vendors come in. So we need good platform and vendor contacts and good equipment vendor contacts, and both are... So the platform is rather good, those contacts are rather good. The equipment vendor contacts are rather more difficult because there are more people involved. We try to use the platform vendors to provide us with good contacts there. And that means politics. You want good contacts, you need politics. That is an introduction to, I think, my next slide, which is a rather controversial thing to do. Title, I had an animation here, but since it's PDF, the surprise is lost. It means bye-bye bomb, because there are some objections expressed with respect to our name, being Free Bob. Would we also use Free Dice, for example? Would we fork off to go out and do Free Dice? I don't think that's a good thing to do. But I can understand that Free Bob is a problem for certain people. Name changes suck, but, well, let's just do it. And then you better do it fast and quick and just bite the bullet, because 100 names can be suggested and none are good. And this is what it's going to be. Pronounced Fado. The O doesn't really have a meaning, but we have a logo that has an O. So let's make it Free Firewire Audio Drivers OO. And you can do with this whatever you want. Alright? This logo has certain distinguishable features, so I guess you can already know where this comes from. What's the current status of this newly born Fado? The work that's done is the low-level device interfaces talking to the platforms for the three current supported platforms. This audio and MIDI streaming is done. It's complete rewrite compared to FreeBop 1, but it's mostly done. With a Jack backend. But it's a matter, we provide an API and we wrote a Jack backend using this API, so writing an ALSA plugin shouldn't be that hard. The work that's being done is debugging and testing, which is maybe one of the really difficult things to do. And device control, that's the top priority at this point, I think. Streaming works rather well, device control is what we need to do. The low-level code for this is actually almost completely ready, in the sense that we know how to do the device communication and we have some sort of abstraction internally to do that. Problem is that we need some external exposed control API that we can specify towards the control applications, so to provide the interfacing. And that's a really difficult problem to solve. We're facing that already for months. We want to do it first time right, and it's really difficult. Probably it's going to be OSC, something defined auth in auths in OSC that give you the control. And we want configuration persistence, which is an issue. Yeah, well, I think you can understand why configuration persistence is important. You don't want to re-configure everything every time. What is the next step? So we're busy doing something. So the next step would be the mixer control application, streaming of SPDIF and digital data. It's not, so the consumer type of digital data is not really supported well. Things like ADAT are supported because they are converted to normal I/O. They're indistinguishable from analog I/O in their format for streaming. But this is something else. It's a little bit difficult. Sometimes SPDIF is supported, sometimes it isn't. It depends on the device's configuration. If it converts SPDIF to the normal streaming format for audio, then we support it. But if it keeps raw SPDIF to stream, then we don't support it yet. The Jack MP backend port, we have an experimental port backend for Jack MP on the 1.0 on the FreeBop 1. And we would like to port it. We need an ALSA plugin. Metric Hollow, if the things start to move, then we can actually implement their devices too. And then there's the port to the new kernel stack that is being designed, which should provide a much better latency figures and much more efficient data transfer. Efficiency and latency are one of the problems in the current RAW 1394 approach. It's not designed for low latency work, it's designed for addressing cameras and things like that. So that's something that is going to change. Okay, second part of this picture. In the paper, this picture is a whole. So we started the dev RAW 1394. Device node, we have libraw providing abstractions of all the traffic types. And then what we had was, or what we have is libfreebop, which is going to be libfado, doing device discovery configuration and stream setup, and then actually stream the data. These are two separate parts in the library. And then we have an abstraction layer that can be used to implement audio or control clients. That's our basic setup. I don't think there's something really special about this. I think everybody that was faced with this problem would solve it like this. At least I hope so. How is it in the current driver How is it implemented? It's a completely C++ implementation. And regarding discovery configuration, we have this one interface which represents a device and what the device should be able to do. And then we have, I'm really sad that OpenOffice messed this up. But of course, these all are children of the, or implement this interface and implement the specific commands that are necessary to actually do what is asked by the interface function. These AV devices contain stream processors. Stream processors are the thing that we use for streaming, this abstraction of our streaming. What stream processors do is take FireWire packets and convert them to audio style things or backwards. That's basically what they do. How they do it, I've written a rather elaborate description in the paper. I'm not going to do it here because then we run out of time if we are not already running out of time. I have to move on. The nice thing about this approach is that the problem is different devices use different discovery but can use the same streaming protocol. For example, Bebop and DICE use different configuration stuff or different configuration methods but use this exactly the same streaming. So this stream processor is also subclassed to do the actual streaming implementation, and these are all the same. For the motor, there's a totally, completely different streaming stream processor. And what we basically do is combine an AV device or define which stream processors are present in the AV device. And by that, like that, we can try and reuse our code. And this is what made the implementation of the DICE so easy. I only got this 2 weeks ago, the specification 3 weeks ago, and the device itself 2 weeks ago, and this was the only part I had to implement. And it is fairly easy if you have rather good specifications. And I could just take the existing AMDTP, which is a protocol, which is a specification for the streaming. I can take the existing stream processor and just attach it or use it for the DICE device, and it just worked. And that was a nice experience. This Balance AV device is something else. It's what we use to implement two computers talking to each other, which is one of the things we're going to implement, or which is already there but just not completely working yet. Let's see. How does this stream processor look? Actually, a stream processor is a multiple inherited structure. That is, on the one side, the port manager, and on the other side, it's an ISO stream. It's an isochronous stream. Or it's a target for an isochronous handler. Let's say, start with the port manager. Port manager just contains a set of ports of a certain type. Virtual function and things like that are really nice to do this kind of stuff. And the port manager is what is presented to the audio side of the things. So we just present a set of ports to the audio side, and we know what to do with these ports and where the data comes from and goes to. The stream processor knows, and it will do the proper things to the data to convert it into or from a stream. Streams are provided with packets, and they're composed actually of packets. Let's say ISO handlers will provide packets to the ISO streams. Why is there a distinction here? Let's say we have a manager for the ISO handlers that will make sure that the handlers themselves are able to get the streams or to retrieve the streams from kernel space, the packets. And then the handlers will push them into the stream, and the stream processor, which is actually a stream, we'll convert them to audio ports or to audio or MIDI ports. Why do we use a distinction between these two. That is because OHCI supports reception on multiple channels. So you can grab the packets from channel 1, 2, 3, for example, and then you have to distribute them. There are different streams. So one handler can just supply multiple streams with data. Why do they do that? Because what usual OHCI hardware can do is receive is four DMA contacts, so four DMA engines. And for each stream you receive, for each thing you receive, or in this case for each handler, you need one DMA engine. So that would restrict you to four DMA, four streams, four channels you can receive on if you were to use a one-to-one mapping between channels and handlers. But the specification allows you to receive on multiple channels such that you can actually receive all 64 channels present on the bus through one DMA engine, or whatever you want to do. In reality, this is not used much, but for bigger setups, this is an extension path that is already present in the system. And then we have the complete, the bigger picture, which is the device manager. The device manager contains a set of AV devices. AV devices are actually one-to-one mapping to the nodes. So you have one box, which is that is one AV device, and it presents them as one device to the outside world, or it can present them as one device to the outside world. Actually, it's completely configurable, or there can be some configuration to the extent that what are you going to present? Are you going to present first two and then one separate, or things like that? The actual streaming is done here. So we have a separate thread that runs the manager that provides the stream processors with its packets, or that fetches the stream processors from its packets. And then there's a wait transfer type of API, so you can wait on the arrival of enough packets and then transfer them to the audio side. There's one intermezzo I've put here. So this is almost everything I'm going to say about design. This is the global overview, this is the design. You want more info? Read the paper. Synchronization is horrible in FireWire. It's nice that you have one clock, that's one good thing. The format of that clock, I've already said, is not nice. But there's, like, this is the solution to this problem of having different round-trip latencies every time you restart check or restart streaming. The device has certain buffers internally, and you don't know how much they are filled or when exactly everything is going to happen. So what do? They provide timestamps. Every packet, which at 48K contains 8 frames, contains one timestamp, a SID timestamp. What is this timestamp? It's the value of the cycle timer, which is global, at the time the sample is taken, and they add a certain transfer delay. So basically the device that is sending the timestamp determines when it should be played out, which is actually normal. If you think about it. And then there's this sentence like the receiver, being the receiving side of the stream, shall present the, I should use packet here, shall present the packet at SID time plus processing delay. You can choose the processing delay as long as it's constant. What this actually means is that the sending part will define the moment at which you are to present the sample to your audio engine. If I summarize it like this, it actually looks very simple to me now, because I've actually implemented it. I don't know if it looks simple to you. I hope so, because that means that I've been explaining it well. But this is really horrible to implement. It's very difficult if you start having multiple streams, and especially if you start having multiple topologies that have different blocks. So where the cycle timer is not globally unique. And that's also a scenario we want to be able to do. Have multiple buses of each 400 megabits and be able to combine them on the long run. So considering all these synchronization issues, it's really difficult. First you have to do the conversion from the timestamps and the counters to actually ticks, that's what we do. Then we only have to handle the wrapping and all these things only once. And this is so inefficient. All this unwrapping and detecting when wrap occurred, and all this is horribly inefficient, but you cannot get away without doing it. Then all these buffering issues that are in different layers, so RAW 1394 also introduces extra buffering and things. Hard to predict, and it's introduced extra difficulties. But the way we have actually implemented the synchronization is to predict the cycle counter value when there is one buffer ready. So you have a period size, for example, 520 samples or frames. And what we are going to do is use the timestamps that are coming in, for example, or that are coming in, to extrapolate where is my buffer point going to be. And then we're going to wait for that time, and then we're going to do it again. We're going to ask, where will our next buffer time instant be? And once that becomes negative, you know that it has passed. And that allows us to do it within a few hundred microseconds to determine when the buffer expires, actually. The problem was that you have to map the cycle counter to the system time, because you need the sleep function or the micro sleep or whatever you want to use, but you need the mapping to system time, and that was not provided by the 1394 API. What you could do was read the register, but it would use FireWire transactions to read it, and you could do a sequential read of the cycle timer and then read the system timer. The problem is, you don't know what is happening in between these two reads. It's not atomic, and that means that there was sometimes some delay that was unpredictable, and then you needed a very slow DLL to get all this junk out, and then it didn't lock fast enough. And so, kernel extension, atomic read of the cycle timer register from the card, and the timer in the system. And that solved a lot of our problems, because now the DLL could have a wider bandwidth and we could lock faster for this mapping. Okay. It also, the implementation introduces some dependencies or dependencies between what is the sync master, which provides the cycle, so this prediction, and the other stream processors. Because you also have to generate the timestamps. If you lock onto something that you receive, you have to generate the presentation time for the receivers. I'm almost ready, so I'm going to make it in time. What are the open issues? Well, first of all, what if you want to use multiple topologies? For example, you have two host controllers and you don't want to connect them together. But if you connect two host controllers together, two cards in your system, then they are the same topology. They are connected, so therefore they are the same topology. But what if you don't want to do that, but still want one device presented to check? So you have to synchronize both host controls to each other, and it's not really trivial. And on the other hand, if you want to avoid this multiple these DMA engine restrictions, which is most of the time four receive and four transmit DMA engines, it gives you limits. So what you could do is have two host controllers in the system to double your DMA engines. But then you have to select for every stream what host controller am I going to do, to use, and these things. It's not really easy to support the complete flexibility. So that's really an open issue that should be thought through before proceeding very far ahead, going very far ahead. Then more something related to the environment we're working in, the audio side. How do we handle things like the TC PowerCore or the Duende Eventide 8000? These are all devices that are platform supported. Like for example, the FireWire side of things can be easily supported. They're dice based. But what do you do with them? They are not interfaces. They are not something that should be used as a backend for Jack, because they aren't. There's no audio coming in or going out. So do you just throw it all in one, as presented all as one set of ports being synchronized, or do you want to use a Jack client, which is also one of the possibilities? You want to use LASPA, LV2, whatever. How are we going to do that? What's the ideal way to present that? It's more an open question towards people knowing what they're talking about in this respect. And then there's inter-process communication issues, since we're all doing it in user space. And I don't really know about how to do that efficiently. But for example, in the Motu case, there is a feedback stream for things you do on the front panel. For example, you change volume or something like that on the front panel. Then they stream it, they multiplex it into the audio and MIDI stream. But in our system, it's a separate thing. We can demultiplex it and output it, but that would mean that Jack is the only thing that knows about the control feedback. You don't want to implement your control system in Jack, which means that we have to define some way of communication between those two parts. You have a control application that needs a feedback that is only available in Jack, and you cannot tap into that yet. So how do we do that? One way would be to implement something OS open sound control registration or whatever. Please help me out here. Interface as backend. What's this? I kind of forgot what I want to say here. Okay, it's more or less a system where you have an audio interface, you have one OHCI controller in your system, and then you have, for example, a Phase 88 device, which is your audio interface, and then you have a PowerCore, which is an extra DSP device. If we are doing a separation between this interface being a backend and being Jack ports, and this processing unit not appearing in the Jack tree but being a LASPA plugin or something like that, not being a Jack client, then how are we going to do the communication between these two? The issue with making it simply a Jack client is that these things can have horrible amounts of channels. You have a horrible channel count. And if you combine several of these together So interface counts of channel counts of 500 for interfaces are a little bit ridiculous unless you're building a wavefield system like this. But for processing things, for effects, that might not be so ridiculous, having a lot of channels. And Jack isn't really built as something to be a plug-in type of thing. So that the communication and the real actual implementation of that is still something I don't know how to do. The easy answer would be just do it and then see what happens. I think it was one of the suggestions in the earlier talks, like our way of doing things is by just doing them, somebody provides a solution and then you see what goes wrong. I prefer to think about it a little bit more and discuss it. Now that we're together, we can do it. Okay, to conclude. With respect to the completeness of the implementation of the driver, I think FreeBOP 1 provides 70%, especially of the, let's say, the, if you would consider it as absolute functionality, not user experience. User experience will probably be a little bit lower due to the lack of control, but the function, the core functionality is actually at 70%. Let's say that we aim for 95% currently for the next release. So I'm not really ready yet with the fact if I will go or if we will release Fado as 1.0 or directly as 2.0, which we might be doing. But it will provide 95%. There will be some things that are not really supported, but core functionality 95%. Things like multiple topologies and all these exotic things are not really going to be supported. It's basic device usage, and then we'll see what goes on. Work on the vendor context is being done, and it takes a lot of time. With the platform vendors, it's rather good. It's also rather easy because there are only two, and that means two contexts and really easy to work with. Equipment vendors, there's variation. The people from Theratech were very helpful. They provided devices, provided information. It was all very easy right from the start. Now others start to come in. Focusrite is also, we have contacts with them. Others just don't respond, like Mackie, for example. They just don't respond if you have an inquiry, so maybe I should find another way through people that have some email address, and that's what I'm currently trying to do, for example, for M-Audio, for Prisonus. The goal is to provide the most complete support as possible for everything. And the problem is that it's starting to become more of a politics and communication issue than it is a coding issue. And that's, yeah, it's not really easy. Nevertheless, we could use some extra developers, and we might have some, well, my stance in this whole thing is, it's ridiculous if you start to develop and you have to buy a device, which is, my goal is, if there are developers that are interested in joining, please don't be scared off by the fact that you have to pay big time to get a device. I will do my complete best to provide you with one. And I hope that it works. It might be a little bit dangerous to spread these words out because a lot of parasitic things might happen. But if you're serious about it, that should not be a problem. It might be an opportunity for poor students wanting interfaces or want to use interfaces and have plenty of time to code. Contact me. I will be a thorough investigation of what you are worth. I think that's my last slide. Except for something that... Oh no! The most important one of all. Acknowledgements. First of all, Daniel deserves a lot of respect for founding it, for coming up with it, for starting it all while he was at BridgeCo, and for doing the AVC implementation. BridgeCo is based on the AVC standards, which is such a pile of documents, and it's really difficult, and it's horrible, and I don't like it. And he did this, and this is, and the way he did it was incredibly, actually is incredibly clean, and it's really nice. So I've done the streaming part, he's done the discovery part, and while the streaming part is actually simple because it's well defined, and it's hard because it handles time and synchronization. The AVC part doesn't have any timing issues, for a lot of time issues, but it is very hard to understand. It's just such a complex system. So a lot of respect for him. And then Jonathan Wood and Olaf Crisp did the motor reverse engineering. So that's nice. Leonard Ritter did our original logo, and as you might have expected, Thorsten took his shot at our new logo, and I rather like it. And then testers and people maintaining our website were trying to provide some extra information in the wiki. And then I wanted to do the demo that went wrong a few days ago, but I didn't do it indeed afterwards, and then I have plenty of time to make sure that it will work, because it does work. This is a very wrong, I'm going to explain it just in 1 second. So what I want to do, and what I currently do, is have Jack with the currently still FreeBob backend connected to the Phase 88 through FireWire, which is a BBOP platform, and then connected to the DICE EVM, which is a DICE platform, obviously. Have WordClock to synchronize the two, and then have some audio going into the Phase 88, but going to Jack, going to the DICE, exiting through ADAT, going through another ADAT in, and then displayed on the computer, just to prove that we can make these two work together, which is a unique feature. This won't happen on Windows. It might happen on Apple, but it's not there yet. And we can already do it. And this has a channel count of 36. I think this is 26, and this is 10. Yeah, 36 channels, input and output. So that we also gives an idea of the scalability of what we're doing. This proves it all, hopefully. And that's why I find it really fortunate that it went wrong. So, okay, here I end.
Okay, we can have like one quick question from the audience. And actually, Peter has the microphone that's portable. So we either give this to one of us, who will go to the person who has the question. And then you'll have to stand still here with the microphone.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Any questions?
I received questions.
This is
so either I've totally smashed you guys, or I just was a good...
Just a tiny question about latency. So which latencies do you expect to get from the new 2G interface? Well, in the best case, obviously. So.
Okay, latencies. I can give you numbers for some stuff. The first generation BBOP things based on the DM1000, which are, for example, the qualifier and the Phase 88. They have the qualifier. I'm really sure about it. I did measurements on Windows, and the device itself has 250 frames of latency at 48K, and that's the lower limit, of course, because the driver will only increase that. We add currently about 80 to 100 frames, depending on your configuration. If you run it at 32, 2 times 32, then you would get 80 to 100 frames extra latency. There's still a buffering in the kernel of the packets, and this introduces some extra. So basically, globally, it gets down to 400 frames for the first generation Phase 88. I expect lower stuff for the next generation BBOPs. So the first generation BBOP, I mean, not Phase 88. So BBOP platform, first generation, 400 frames. The next generation will be lower, but I don't have anything to test with. And since the DICE is a full hardware implementation, it will be also lower than first generation BBOPs. So I expect latencies that around 250 frames should be possible, complete round trip, that is. So we're never ever going to reach PCI latencies. That's not going to happen. Like the Deltas with their 180 frames, or something like that, that is not going to happen, forget it. It's too complex for that. You are not dealing with a double buffer scheme where you can switch everything rather fast. Yeah, but you're dealing with that, but then it's translated into something serial, and then it's de-translated into something other. Not going to happen. For latency, it's good enough, in my opinion, it's good enough. What is 400 frames? But you're not going to achieve Delta 1010 or RME performance. Okay.
Okay, thank you very much for accepting the invitation and presenting the new FALO name for FireWire.
Okay. It was my pleasure, actually.
Now we're horribly late on our schedule, so the question is, do we want to start with the discussion real soon, or do we want to take a longer break? So who's for a 5 minute break and who's for a quarter hour? Do people have to leave soon?
5 minutes and
then we start. Okay, we do 10 minutes. We have a 10 minute break and then we get back here. And then I have a couple of general questions and announcements, and then we start the discussion.
That was not effective.
Yeah.